Hello, and welcome to another edition of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, brought to you in conjunction with KBIA. Tonight we present two Thanksgiving plays, based on short stories from the early 1900s. The first is called Beetle Rings Thanksgiving Mascot by Sheldon C. Stoddard. And the second is Bert's Thanksgiving by J.T. Talbridge. In our first story, The Beetle Rings Thanksgiving Mascot, we begin with poor Joe Bennett, who has been unemployed for 6 months following a long run of fever and had fallen into a state of extreme poverty.
The lumber camp on the Featherstone, where I had been at work, had broken up and gone. An old shack, deserted by some hunter, and now standing alone in the great woods, was the only home I could provide for my little family. It had served its purpose in the warm weather, but now, in late November, with winter coming on, it was no wonder I became disheartened. Then my strength had returned, though, and some of my old initiative, and I found work. It was 15 miles away in the Beetle Ring Lumber Camp, which had the worst reputation on the Featherstone, but it was work. Hopefully I could soon move my family into a more hospitable home. But Beetle Ring was not a great place to work for someone like me who does not drink, smoke, or cuss. I just quietly did my work and took all their insults in silence. And in the meantime, our new baby had come. It was Saturday, late in November, and the first snow had just fallen.
Your papa will come tonight, baby. It's Saturday night and it's getting late, but your papa will be here soon. Oh, I'm so glad to see you, Joe. It's almost midnight, and what's wrong with your foot? Why is it all bandaged up like that?
Just some bad luck, that's all, Nanny. Seems like we've had our share of it lately. Are you all right, Nan? That's my main concern.
I'm all right, Joe, but I've been so worried.
What about the baby, Nan?
Here, just take a look at that sweet little pink face. She's fine, Joe. She's just fine as she can be, isn't she? Now, tell me about your foot. Did a log fall on it?
Nah, I cut it. Almost cut it half off. Hit the bone. It'll be weeks before I can work again. It means I don't know what. And it scares me to think about it, Nanny. The cook sewed it up and bandaged it. But you can tell he's no doctor.
How did you ever get home, Joe?
Rode one of Poe's Bream's horses. His red roan.
15 miles on horseback with that foot? It might have killed you, Joe.
I had to get home, Nan. I didn't know how you were getting along and felt I had no choice.
I didn't think they'd loan you a horse, any of them.
They wouldn't, not if I'd asked them. They don't seem to like me much, so I didn't ask.
I'm scared, Joe. If you took a horse without asking, what'll they think? Where is it, Joe?
Don't you worry, Nan. I've sent the horse back to Pike Pole Pete. He'll have him back before morning. Pose won't miss him till then, and I wrote a note explaining everything. Pose may be a little sore, but he'll get over it. I had to come home, Nan. I just had to.
If anything should happen, if Pete doesn't get it back, they'd think you'd stole it, and...
Nan. Don't be creating problems before they've come up. Pete'll get the horse back. I've done the fellow lots of favors, and he won't let me down now. Don't worry, girl.
Oh, Joe, your foot, your poor foot.
I'm down on my luck, Nan. There's no use trying. Everything's against me. Everything. Following me like a grim death, and grim death will probably be the end of it. Here in this old shack that's not fit to winter hogs in, let alone humans. There's not enough wood cut to last a week. You'll freeze, Nan. You and the baby. And I'm just nothing.
Don't give up, Joe. We will find a way.
Look here, Nanny. Here's 2 silver dollars. That's what we've got to survive the winter on, and me all banged up from my own axe.
Don't get so downhearted, Joe. Well, next Thursday's Thanksgiving. We've seen hard times, and we may see harder, but I never knew Thanksgiving to come yet without something to be thankful for. Never.
Outside, the storm continued, fine snow sifting down rapidly. Pike Pole Pete found it rough going, with his face into the wind.
Blue blazes! Nobody should be out in this weather. Bennett's a good fellow, all right, and he's hurt. But if he hadn't saved my life twice, he could get this critter back himself. The road forks here, and Turner's place is yonder, less than a mile. I'll hitch in his barn a spell. Wait till the storm lets up. and go on later.
But at Turner's house, Pete found three congenial spirits and a jug. And a few hours later, the easygoing fellow was deep in a tipsy sleep that would last for hours. The next morning, Sunday, dawned bright and clear upon freshly fallen snow. Beetle Ring Camp lay wrapped in white stillness. The camp did not stir until late, for Sunday was Beetle Ring's day. Not for rest, but for carousing. Two men had started out early, the camp's jug delegation, to the Skylark Tavern. Presently, the men began to straggle out to the sheds where the horses were kept. Posey Bream yawned lazily as he threw open the door of his particular shack, then suddenly jerked to attention.
What ails you, Posey? Have you seen a ghost?
No, Skid, there's no ghost. Look here, Skid.
Good heavens, Posey. By God, your red roan's been stolen. It was the finest horse in the camp.
The news flew over the camp like wildfire. Posey Bream's red roan had been taken. The burly lumbermen came hurrying from all directions. There was no doubt about it. The horse was gone, and the snow had covered every trace. There was absolutely no clue to follow. Among lumbermen, there were hardly any crimes worse than horse stealing.
What I want to know is, what's become of that yellow-haired goody-two-shoes, Joe Bennett?
By George, that's right. Where is he?
He skipped out. Well, it's clear enough now. I never liked that feller anyway.
Yeah, I never liked him either, Bill. Never chipped in with the boys and was always laying low. He knew it was going to snow and that it would cover his tracks, and the cook just sewed up his blame foot.
Maybe we'll catch him. Up at Fat Pine 2 years ago, Big Donovan stole a horse. They caught him all right.
Yeah, I remember. I was there. We caught him up north.
Worth $150, that roan was. Say, here comes Trapper John. Maybe he can help. Hey, John, you didn't see anybody with a horse last night or this morning, did you?
Yeah, I saw a horse last night with a man riding it. He had a big foot, like somebody wrapped a tent around it.
What color was the horse, John?
Well, I couldn't really see in the dark, but I think it was a big roan.
Who wants to help me get my horse back?
It was evening when the men stopped in the woods just outside the shack. A light shone out from a window, lighting up a little space in the somber woods.
The fellow's got pals, probably. You wait here while I take a look around.
I'll go with you just in case. Well, what do you see?
Yep, he's in there all right. But it looks like the only pal he's got is a thin woman with a sad face lying on a miserable little cot. Wait, Bennett is holding something. Now what? My lord, it's a baby.
By God, you're right. He has a bundle in his arms. What are you going to do?
You remember I told you about when I was married? I had to watch my young bride being carried to her grave with our dead baby on her chest. I don't think I ever really got over it. Let's have the other fellas take a look and see what they think. Go get them for me.
All right, sure thing, Pose.
Take a look in that window there, men, and tell me what you think. That's what I thought. Now let's go home.
But what about your horse, Pose?
Damn the horse. Do you think that man sitting there holding a baby is a horse thief? Just look at his face. I ain't worrying about that horse.
And the men rode silently to the camp.
Come on, Skid. Let's go check that horse stall and see what we find. Yep, just as I figured, there's my roan, safe and sound.
And look here, there's a bit of crumpled paper pinned to the saddle blanket.
Well, read it.
I took your horse. I had to. There was no choice. I'll make it right with you somehow. And it's signed Bennett.
Of course he had to.
It was an uncommon pretty baby.
It was a dreadful shack they was living in, though.
Well, that's just it. The first really hard, cold spell. That woman yonder and the little baby, they'll freeze. That's what they'll do in that little old tar paper lean-to.
And I've been thinking, since Bennett belonged to the camp, he was one of us. Even though he didn't fit in real well, since we kind of abused the fellow for being stingy, that we kind of have an obligation to him. We need to get him out of that cow shed before they freeze plumb solid.
Yeah, I'm with you, Posey.
And I've been feeling guilty about not getting that horse back to you in time, so I was a-thinking about that storeroom of ours. It's snug and warm and roomy, and we can put a stove into it and
That's a great idea, Pete.
And you know, I've been thinking, next Thursday's Thanksgiving. Don't know if I've ever thought about it in about 10 years. If we stir around sharp, we can get things ready by then, and that wouldn't hurt Beetle Ring to celebrate for once.
And it's my firm belief that that baby of Bennett's was designed special. And, as you might say, Providence has intervened. That baby was made to be Beetle Ring's mascot. The Fat Pine and the Horseshoe Camps both have mascots to bring luck. And I've noticed Beetle Ring ain't had much luck lately.
Yep, time for a change.
Thanksgiving morning was cold but clear. More snow had fallen, and a deep, feathery whiteness stretched across the land. A wavering line of smoke rose over the roof of the little old shack in the woods. Bennett was winding rags round the arm pieces of some rough crutches he had made. While gathering firewood the day before, he had broken open the wound, and it was excruciatingly painful.
Joe, where are you going?
I'm going to try to get help, Nan. We're out of almost everything, and my foot is no better.
You can't do it, Joe. You'll die if you try, Joe, alone in the woods. Oh, Joe.
Oh, we'll all die if I don't try, Nanny.
Joe, there's a bunch of men on horses riding up. They're a hard-looking bunch.
Yep, it's the Beetle Ring men, Nan.
Oh, it's about the horse, Joe. They've come about the horse. They're after you, Joe, and they'll take you away.
I'm here, Post, and I admit, I took your horse, but I...
Damn the horse, that's all right. I know you were just doing what you had to do. Here, shake, Pard.
All right.
Is that your wife, Pard?
Yes, this is my wife, Nanny.
How about the kid, Pard?
Yes, that's our daughter.
Pard, the boys over at Beetle Ring heard, as you might say, accidental, about you folks over here, your wife and the baby. They were powerful interested, especially about the baby. Why, Pard, some of the boys ain't seen a baby in 10 years. And we thought, as you belong to the camp, maybe you and your wife would allow that the camp had a kind of claim on the little bundle.
A claim?
Yeah, kind of like claiming a mine. Don't really mean it's ours. I mean, it's your kid and all. But we got to thinking. Up at Fat Pine, they got what they call a mascot, being a tame bear. And up at Horseshoe, they got what they call a mascot, though it's only a goat. Lots of camps have them. They supposedly bring good luck. And the boys are sure that this baby of yours was designed by Providence to be Beetle Ring's mascot.
Why, I never heard of such a thing.
Now, Pard, Beetle Ring, as you know, ain't what you'd call a Sunday school. But the boys, they'll behave. They fixed up that storeroom real nice, with a soft bed, a big stove, lots of wood, and so on. And we've got a cow to make milk for the woman and the baby. Say, we got a powerful notion to get you all settled there. Got a sleigh fixed with covers of robes and blankets, and Skid'll drive careful. He's a master at driving, Skid is. You'll come, won't you? The boys are waiting.
Oh, Joe, I knew Thanksgiving would come, and things would turn out all right.
There, Pard, you just see about wrapping up the woman and the little one, and me and Skid, being as you're hurt, you know, we'll tote 'em out there to the sleigh. Joe, you take the red roan.
Oh, no, I couldn't.
Under these circumstances, Pard, you're welcome to all the horses in Beetle Ring.
Soon the young mother was comfortably settled in the sleigh. But when Skid Thompson appeared in the door of the old shack, bearing a tiny form muffled up with wondrous care, every one of the Beetle Ring men was muted with a reverent silence. With a steady, practiced hand, Skid Thompson guided his powerful team through the deep snow, back to the Beetle Ring camp. By the end of the day, Joe and his family were settled into the big storeroom at Beetle Ring. Presently, Posey and Skid ambled over toward the door.
You go on ahead, Skid, and ask him.
Well, you go ahead and ask him yourself, Pose. I'm bound to stumble all over myself. Go on.
Come on in.
It's just me and Skid. You doing all right, pard?
Right as can be, Pose.
Your wife's all right? Looks like she's got a little more color in her cheeks.
Yes, she's doing better.
And what about the baby?
She's pretty as a rainbow sunset, Skid.
The boys, pard, are anxious about that little bird. They're kind of hankering, pard. And, Mum, if you're willing and ain't afraid to trust her with us, why, we'd be mighty glad to tote her, just for a few minutes, over to camp. The boys are steady, all of them, steady as churches. They hain't soaked a mite of liquor today, Mum, and they ain't going to. They threw the jug into a snowdrift, and they'd take it kindly, Mum, if you are willing.
Certainly. Here, just let me wrap her up.
Yes, wrap her up warm. We don't want her getting cold.
Posey was back in less than a quarter hour.
She went to sleep while I was a-toting her, and the boys' part are mighty pleased, and Mum, thank you very kindly. They say, the boys do, there ain't such a mascot as theirs in 500 miles. They see luck coming, big chunks of it, pard, already. Here, I'll close the door gently on my way out so as not to wake her.
And on that heartwarming note, we turn to our next Thanksgiving story called Bert's Thanksgiving by J.T. Talbridge. Like our last story, it is a tale of how bad luck can turn to good on Thanksgiving Day. Little Bert, the newspaper boy, was trying to sell his last edition on a dreary November day. His ears were red and his lips were blue. He was stationed outside a cheap eating house in Boston, but there weren't many people out because it was Thanksgiving Day, and it was cold. Just as he was about to give up, an old man, dressed in a seedy black coat and a dilapidated derby, stopped at a nearby doorway. Bert said to him,
"Buy a paper, sir? All about the fire in East Boston and arrest of safe burglars in Springfield. Only 2 cents.
You ought to come down in your price this time of day. You can't expect to sell a morning paper at 12 o'clock for full price."
"Well, give me a penny then."
"You look cold."
"Cold? I'm froze half to death, and I want my dinner. And I'm going to have a big dinner, too, seeing it's Thanksgiving Day."
"Ah, lucky for you, my boy. You've got a home to go in and friends, too, I hope."
"No, sir. No home and no friends. Only my mother and Hop Houghton. I told them to meet me here, and we'd have a first-rate Thanksgiving dinner together. It's no fun to be eating alone Thanksgiving Day. It sets a feller to thinking about everything."
"It's more lonesome not to eat at all. And what can a boy like you have to think about, eh? Here, I guess I can find 1 cent for you, though there's nothing in the paper, I know."
"Here, you've made a mistake. A bargain's a bargain. You gave me 2 cents instead of one."
"No, I didn't. I never give anybody a penny more than they deserve."
"But look here. There's 2 cents in my hand. Let me return one."
"No matter. That's less than I have to spend for my dinner, that's all."
"This poor old man. He's seen better days, I imagine. Perhaps he has no home. A boy like me can stand it, but I guess it must be hard for him. He meant to give me that penny all along, and it doesn't look like he's had a decent dinner for many a day."
All this went through Bert's mind like a flash. He was a generous little fellow, and any kindness shown to him, no matter how small, made his heart overflow.
"Look here, where are you going to eat your dinner today?"
"I can get a bite here in this cheap diner as well as anywhere. It doesn't matter much to me."
"Eat with me. I'd love to have you."
"I'm afraid I couldn't afford to dine as well as you."
"I'll pay for your dinner. Come on. We only have Thanksgiving once a year, and everyone should have a good time then."
"But you're waiting for another boy."
"Oh, Hop Houghton? He won't come now. It's too late. He's gone to a place down on North Street, I suppose. A place I don't much like. There's tobacco smoke and enough beer to float a cargo ship. No, he won't come now. So much the worse for him. He likes the people down there. I don't." "I mean, rowdies and such. Poor people, if they behave themselves, are just as respectable to me as rich folks. And I ain't the least mite aristocratic. Here, let's go in."
"Indeed, I'm very glad to hear it."
"Here's the menu."
"Oh, no. Since you're paying, you have to choose for me. But nothing very extravagant, you know. I'm used to plain fare."
"So am I. But I'm going to have a good dinner on Thanksgiving Day, and so are you. What do you say to chicken soup, and then wind up with a thumping big piece of squash pie? How's that for a Thanksgiving dinner?"
"Sumptuous. But won't it cost you too much?"
"Too much? No, sir. Chicken soup, 15 cents. Pie? They give great big pieces here. Thick, too. 10 cents. That's 25 cents. Half a dollar for two. Of course, I don't do this way every day in the year, but Mother's glad to have me once in a while. Here, waiter, two big bowls of chicken soup, and two big pieces of squash pie.
Where is your mother? Why don't you dine with her?
That's the question. Why don't I? Well, you see, I've got the best mother in the world. What I'm trying to do is find a home for her so we can live together and eat our Thanksgiving dinners together. Some boys want one thing, some another. One goes in for good times, another is in such a hurry to get rich, he don't care much how he does it. But what I want, more than anything, is to be with my mother and my two sisters again, and I ain't ashamed to say so.
Why, you shouldn't be ashamed.
I haven't been with her now for 2 years, hardly at all since Father died. Father kept a little grocery store on Hanover Street, but when he died, he didn't leave us anything. We had lived pretty well up to that time. My two sisters and I even had some schooling. But after Father passed, Mother had to do something, and her friends got her a nursing position, and she's a nurse now. We couldn't be with her, of course, because she has to stay with sick people. She got us a decent place to live, but I saw how hard it was going to be for her to support us. So I said, I'm a boy. I can take care of myself. You just pay the board for my sisters and keep them in school, and I'll go to work and maybe help you a little, besides taking care of myself.
What could you do?
That was the trick. I was only 11 years old, and what could I do? I would have liked to have been some nice place where I could do light work and stand a chance of maybe learning a good trade. But beggars can't be choosers. I couldn't find such a nice berth, and I wasn't going to just loaf around, so I started selling newspapers. I've sold newspapers ever since, and I will be 12 years old next month.
Do you like it?
I like to make my own living, but what I want is to learn some business and settle down and make a home for... But there's no use talking about that. Make the best of things, that's my motto. Don't the soup smell good? And don't it taste good, too? They didn't put as much chicken in yours as they did in mine. If you don't mind mine having tasted it, let's change bowls.
No, but I will have some more of this bread, since it doesn't cost anything.
Come now, won't you have something besides the soup and the pie? Don't be afraid, I'll pay for it. Thanksgiving don't come but once a year. You won't? How about a cup of tea to go with your pie?
I think I will have a cup of tea. You are so kind.
All right. Here, waiter, a cup of tea for this gentleman. Well, I've told you about myself. Now tell me something.
About myself?
Yes, I think that would go pretty well with the pie.
Well, I could go back and tell about my plans and hopes when I was a lad of your age, but it would be too much like your own story all over again. Life isn't what we think of it. It will be when we are young, and you'll find that out soon enough. I'm all alone in the world now, and I am 67 years old.
Here, have some cheese with your pie, won't you? It must be so lonely at your age. What do you do for a living?
I have a little place at 27 Devonshire Street. My name is Crooker. You'll find me up two flights of stairs, back room and to the right. Come and see me, and I'll tell you about my business and perhaps help you find the kind of place you're looking for. I know several businessmen. Now, don't let me down.
Oh, I won't. And here's my card. Sorry, it's a little dirty and frayed at the edges.
Herbert Hampton, dealer in newspapers. Isn't that a rather aristocratic name for a 12-year-old newsboy?
They were made for me by a printer's boy I know. I'd done some favors for him, so he made a few cards. Handy to have sometimes, you know.
Well, Herbert, I'm glad to have made your acquaintance. Pie was excellent. I hope you'll come and see me. You'll find me in very humble quarters, but... You are not the aristocratic type, are you? But now, won't you let me pay for the dinner? I believe I have enough money. Let me see.
No, I won't hear of it. I promised I would pay, and I will. I'll take care of it at the counter right now. Let's see. Two chicken soups, two pieces of pie, and a cup of tea. 53 cents, is that right? Here you go. Huh, Mr. Crooker is gone. Well, never mind. I'll go and see him the first chance I have. 27 Devonshire Street, two flights up, on the right.
After which, Bert went resolutely to his cheap lodging house, where he used both soap and water, plus a broken comb, to clean up, then walked 5 miles into the suburbs and got sight, if only for a few minutes, of his mother. On the following Monday, after selling all his papers for the day, Bert went to call on his new acquaintance in Devonshire Street. He climbed the two flights and found the door of the back room at the right ajar. Looking in, he saw Mr. Crooker at a desk, receiving a large roll of money from a well-dressed visitor. Bert waited till the money was counted. Then, as the visitor departed, old Mr. Crooker looked round and saw Bert.
Here, Bert, take a chair. Sit down.
So this is your place of business? What do you do here?
I buy, sell, and rent real estate sometimes. when the market is ripe.
Who for?
For myself.
But I thought you was a poor man.
I am a poor man. Money doesn't make a man rich. I have plenty of money. I own houses all over the city. They give me something to think of and keep me active. I had real riches once, but I lost them long ago. I had a wife and children and friends.
To think of me inviting you to dinner.
It was odd, but it may turn out to have been lucky for both of us. I like you. I believe in you, and I want to make you an offer. I want a trusty, bright boy in this office, somebody I can bring up in my business and leave it to when I get too old to run it myself. What do you say?
Well, what can I say? Except I need to talk it over with Mother.
That afternoon, Bert ran to the house where his mother was nursing, all 5 miles, and told her everything.
This sounds almost too good to be true, but I will talk to Mr. Crooker about it.
And so I want to hire your boy, if that is acceptable to you.
Yes, of course. This is exactly what he has always wanted.
But there is a small stipulation I would like to make.
Yes, what's that?
I own houses all over the city. I would like to offer one of my best properties to you and your family, with ample support for all the children. You see, I don't need any more houses. I need a home. All I ask is that you let me be a part of your household. Share your home with me, and the companionship of your family will be all the riches I could ever want.
Sounds like a good deal to me, Mother. I'd say yes if I was you.
Well, yes, of course, Mr. Crooker. We're very grateful and would be glad to have you as part of our family.
Bert soon accomplished the great ambitions of his life. He found employment in a profitable business, and more than that, he was united once more with his mother and sisters in a happy home, where he has since had a good many Thanksgiving dinners, alongside his good friend, Mr. Crooker. We hope you've enjoyed these companion Thanksgiving stories, Beetle Ring's Thanksgiving Mascot by Sheldon C. Stoddard, and Bert's Thanksgiving by J.T. Topridge. These shows were presented by the Maplewood Barn Radio Players. Our performers for the first show were Terry Yates as Joe, Amy Humphrey as Nanny, Carrie Butters as Pete, Posey was played by Joe Bogue, Darren Helwich was Skid, and Byron Scott was John. In the second show, Joe Hayes played Bert, Byron Scott was Mr. Crooker, and Amy Humphrey portrayed the mother. Thanks for listening, and we hope you will join us again next week for more classic stories from the Maplewood Barn Radio Players, right here on KBIA.